ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Hello, welcome to PM. I'm Samantha Donovan, coming to you from the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation in Melbourne. Tonight, ASIO declares Iran has orchestrated at least two of the recent anti-Semitic attacks in Australia. Also, two police officers shot dead in the Victorian High Country. And a call for better swim safety education after a record year for drowning deaths in Australia.
I think I would look at the beach, and if there's not a lot of waves, I might go in. If it looks safe, I might do, but then I don't know what safe is.
Prime Minister has today made the shock announcement that Iran was behind at least two of the recent anti-Semitic attacks in Australia, one on a Melbourne synagogue, the other on a Sydney cafe. Anthony Albanese described the plots as extraordinary and dangerous acts of aggression that sought to create discord in Australian society. In response, Iran's ambassador to Australia is being expelled from the country, and Australian diplomats in Iran have left the country. The federal government is also moving to list as a terrorist organisation the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, the group said to have orchestrated the attacks. Kathleen O'Connor reports.
After a 10-month investigation into a series of anti-Semitic attacks across Australia, Prime Minister Anthony Albanese declared authorities now know who was behind them.
ASIO has now gathered enough credible intelligence to reach a deeply disturbing conclusion that the Iranian government directed at least two of these attacks. These were extraordinary and dangerous acts of aggression orchestrated by a foreign nation on Australian soil.
The anti-Semitic attacks followed the Hamas terrorist attack in Israel on October 7, 2023. Australia's intelligence gathering agency, ASIO, and the Australian Federal Police then began their investigation. They found the Iran government was behind at least two incidents. One was an arson attack at Jewish restaurant Lewis Continental Kitchen at Bondi Beach in Sydney in October 2024. The second was the firebombing of the Adas Israel Synagogue in Melbourne in December 2024, while the people, including children, were inside praying. It was labelled a terrorist attack.
They have sought to harm and terrify Jewish Australians and to sow hatred and division in our community. A short time ago, we informed the Iranian ambassador to Australia that he would be expelled. We have suspended operations at our embassy in Tehran, and all our diplomats are now safe in a third country.
ASIO Director General Mike Burgess says the Iran government is directing people in Australia to perform the crimes. He says Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, or the IRGC, is pulling the strings.
It's a layer cake of cutouts between IRGC and the person or the alleged perpetrators conducting crimes. In between them, they tap into a number of people, agents of IRGC, and people that they know in the criminal world and work through there. So it's a series of chains. There is an organised crime. There is an organised crime element offshore in this, but that's not to suggest organised crime are doing it. They're just using cutouts, including people who are criminal and members of organised crime gangs, to do their bidding or direct their bidding.
Director General Burgess says the investigation is not over. The ABC understands ASIO does not believe Iran was linked to the false terror alert involving a caravan in northwest Sydney in January, but the agency is still looking into whether Iran was behind a number of other attacks.
The Iranian government directed at least two and likely more attacks on Jewish interests in Australia. The IRGC used a complex web of proxies to hide its involvement. Some of the alleged perpetrators did this because they were paid to do it.
Mr. Burgess wouldn't confirm whether any arrests have been made. Australia established its embassy in Iran in 1968, but today the Prime Minister announced it's severing all diplomatic ties with Iran. And Foreign Minister Penny Wong says Iran's ambassador to Australia, Ahmed Sardadi, has been given 7 days to leave Australia.
As well as three other Iranian officials. This is the first time in the post-war period that Australia has expelled an ambassador. There is no doubt that these extraordinary and dangerous acts of aggression orchestrated by a foreign nation on Australian soil have crossed a line.
The Australian government will now categorise Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps as a terrorist organisation, pending legislation. In the meantime, Foreign Minister Penny Wong is warning Australians not to travel to the country.
I urge any Australian who might be considering travelling to Iran, please do not do so. Our message is, if you are an Australian in Iran, leave now if it is safe to do so.
Opposition leader Susan Lee told Parliament she supports the government's decision.
These acts of egregious foreign interference are brazen attempts to cleave apart our social cohesion, to turn neighbour against neighbour and Australian against Australian.
Also supporting the government's decision is Group Australian United Solidarity for Iran, which is critical of the Iranian regime. Today it described the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps as the driving force behind intimidation, repression and violence.
Kathleen O'Connor with that report. Dr. Kylie Moore-Gilbert is a research fellow in security studies at Macquarie University and an expert on Middle East politics. In 2018, the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps wrongly accused her of being a spy. After her arrest, she spent 804 days in jail in Iran. She told me she's not at all surprised Iran has been orchestrating anti-Semitic attacks in Australia.
Myself and many, many others, particularly within the Iranian-Australian community, have been saying this for more than a year now, particularly since revelations that organised crime and other people with links to crime were some of the perpetrators of these attacks, people who had no professed interest in the Middle East or in the Jewish community, yet were conducting these anti-Semitic attacks, likely for financial benefit. We've seen Iran commission organised crime syndicates abroad in countries like the UK and the US and other European countries to undertake similar attacks in the past. So many of us thought that this was a pattern of behaviour that could be attributed to the Iranian regime.
Have you and members of the Iranian-Australian community seen anything or heard from people that may make you think this sort of activity was going on?
Certainly both myself and a number of Iranian-Australian community members that I personally know or am familiar with have reported multiple incidents of being surveilled, harassed or threatened by individuals that appear to be linked to the Revolutionary Guard or to the Iranian regime in some way. And these reports really escalated from the end of 2022 onwards when Life Freedom protest movement erupted in Iran and we saw mass protests in Australia and high levels of political involvement, particularly in the Iranian-Australian community, calling on the IRGC to be proscribed as a terror organisation and for sanctions against Iran and etc. But of course, you know, none of us saw any evidence about these anti-Semitic attacks. It was all just what we were supposing based on prior examples overseas.
Dr. Moore-Gilbert, remind us who the IRGC are and what actually are their aims?
So the IRGC are the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, and they started off as a kind of a militant organisation, a kind of a rival to the armed forces of the government of Iran, and they emerged out of the 1979 revolution. And they fought in the Iran-Iraq War for 8 years, so they have, you know, considerable military experience. And following that war, they expanded into kind of every realm of the Iranian society and economy and became a kind of a state within a state in Iran, a rival body, not just militarily, but, you know, they have rival judiciary, they have rival prison system, intelligence organization. Their tentacles reach into every aspect of Iranian society and they don't answer to the Iranian government. They answer directly to the supreme leader of Iran and conduct their own policies and processes entirely without any oversight by the government.
What do you think the IRGC is trying to achieve by orchestrating these anti-Semitic attacks in Australia?
The IRGC is a virulently anti-Semitic organisation. They do not distinguish between Australian Jews and the Australian Jewish community and Israelis or the Israeli government. And I know this because I've had dozens and dozens of conversations with them while I was being interrogated and being held by them in an Iranian prison. And, you know, in the mind of the IRGC and the Iranian regime, they're legitimate targets. Australian Jews are legitimate targets. They represent Israel in their eyes, and Israel is their main enemy right now. I mean, we just saw a 12-day hot war emerge between both countries this year. So they would see attacking the Australian Jewish community as an extension of their attacks on Israel, and perhaps it's a soft and easy target for the Iranian regime. It's more difficult for them to penetrate Israeli territory. It's much easier for them to go after innocent Jewish citizens living a peaceful life here in Australia. And sadly, I think, you know, anti-Semitism and their anti-Semitic ideology is at the core of motivating these attacks.
Do you think the government's moving to list the IRGC as a terrorist organisation in Australia is overdue?
Absolutely overdue. We were very, very close, reportedly, to listing them back in 2023. And apparently the Albanese government was very, very close to doing so, but ultimately pulled back due to a variety of reasons, much to the disappointment of victims of the IRGC, like myself and a large number of Iranian Australian community members who'd been advocating for this for a long time.
Do you think expelling the Iranian ambassador from Australia and listing the group as a terrorist organisation will stop their work in Australia?
No, it won't stop them. They've been here for decades and they've embedded people here within the Iranian-Australian community and probably within other non-Iranian communities too. I think it will make some of their work harder, particularly because if you prescribe them as a terror organisation, you're banning people here in Australia from materially supporting them as well. And that includes obviously sending money and financial support, but also feeding information to them, working for them, acting as agents or informers for them on the ground here in Australia. So it makes it much, much easier to prosecute people and to catch people for doing that.
Dr. Kylie Moore-Gilbert is a research fellow at Macquarie University and a former prisoner of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps. Jewish Australians say they're shocked by the revelation that that group has been behind at least two anti-Semitic attacks in Australia. Some are praising the government's expulsion of the Iranian ambassador, while others are calling for more sanctions on Iran. Kimberly Price has more.
Findings that the Iranian regime had orchestrated the 2024 arson attack at a Sydney Jewish restaurant and then a firebombing of a Melbourne synagogue have hit the Jewish community hard. Benjamin Klein is a board member of the Adas Israel Synagogue.
To find out that other countries are orchestrating terrorist attacks on our soil is clearly distressing and news which the community has really, you know, been grappling with.
He says he feels a mixture of shock and relief after the announcement the Iranian ambassador is being expelled from Australia.
You know, whilst it's a strong stance and we pray that it does continue, that the governments continue to lead and show that such hatred doesn't belong on our streets in Melbourne. No community wants to live like this. And now we have kids who are scared to go to parks.
Alex Rivchin is the co-chief executive of the Executive Council of Australian Jewry. He's been in contact with the owners of the Lewis Continental Kitchen.
They were beside themselves. And on one level, this brings some sort of closure, I suppose, and greater clarity as to who was responsible and why. But knowing that a foreign regime that has committed terror attacks throughout the world is targeting Australian Jews, it's absolutely terrifying.
Rabbi Gabby Coltman is the leader of another Melbourne synagogue.
People have really let loose on Jewish institutions, synagogues, and community members. We haven't felt safe, but we have stayed united, we have stayed strong, and ultimately, to now be told that it's a foreign government involved in attacking Jewish Australians. Well, this is just horrific news.
He says his community wants to see real action against anti-Semitism.
What we need is, A, now, to recognise what we're dealing with, and B, to start prosecuting those that are going to continue with this hateful rhetoric. Now, I'm all for free speech, but ultimately, I am not for hate speech.
Naomi Levin is the chief executive of the Jewish Community Council of Victoria. She says many within the Jewish community have felt unsafe and they've increased their own security measures since the outbreak of the Israel-Gaza conflict nearly 2 years ago.
But we have always had a sense, I suppose, that Australia was a safe place for all people, including the Jewish community, and that law enforcement would do whatever they can to protect us. And I think they have been, but to know that Iran has been able to use criminal elements here, it seems, to attack our communities, just really gutting for us, and it's put a lot of us into shock.
She believes these anti-Semitic attacks affect all Australians.
As much as it was Jewish places that were targeted, these are in our suburbs of Melbourne and Sydney. This is an attack on our national security here in Australia. I think that all Australians should be really concerned that we have foreign terrorist organisations who are plotting and carrying out attacks here and threatening their fellow Australians.
Jamie Hyams is the Director of Public Affairs at the Australia, Israel and Jewish Affairs Council. He welcomes the government's moves against Iran but wants to see further action.
I think also it would be good to see if we impose sanctions on Iran, trade sanctions and so on, to make it clear that we're really not going to accept that sort of behaviour.
And he believes there should be stronger international condemnation of Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard.
So this is just an indication of how dangerous this regime is, and it should be, you know, strongly condemned at the United Nations. There should be international sanctions against it. It can under no circumstances be permitted to attain or even seek nuclear weapons, because that would be a complete disaster for the whole of the Middle East and the entire international community.
Jamie Hyams from the Australia, Israel and Jewish Affairs Council. That report from Kimberly Price and Luke Radford. This is PM. I'm Samantha Donovan. You can hear all our programs live or later on the ABC Listen app. Ahead, a call for better education on swimming safely after the annual National Drowning Report recorded a record number of deaths. In Victoria, two police officers have been shot dead and another injured in the state's northeast today. The officers were at a rural property near the town of Porepunkhe to execute a warrant related to historical sex offences. A massive police operation has been underway in the Victorian High Country to find the offender. Police have just held a press conference, and our reporter David Sparks has been following developments. David, what have the police said about this shooting?
Well, there's a huge effort underway by police to find this man. They still don't have him, but what we do have now is a name. He is Desi Freeman. He's a man in his 50s. He is described as a sovereign citizen. Now, police are not giving out all details at the moment. They've obviously got investigations underway. What we do know is that in this community in northeast Victoria, in the Highlands, two police officers were shot and killed while executing a warrant. Police have just held a press conference and Mike Bush, who is the Chief Commissioner of Victoria Police, addressed this matter. He's expressed, I think, in pretty emotional terms in some ways, the loss that police are feeling at the moment. And he described what sounded like an ambush effectively.
What unfolded today was that 10 very dedicated police officers went to execute a search warrant at that address, and we are still debriefing the other officers that were involved, the seven officers that are physically okay but not very traumatised, obviously. They were met by the offender, and they were murdered in cold blood.
That's the Chief Commissioner of Victoria Police, Mike Bush, who's only been in the job for a few weeks. David, what more have police said about their search for the man accused of the shooting?
Well, Mike Bush, the Chief Commissioner, has described him as dangerous. This is Desi Freeman, the man in his 50s who they're looking for. He said that he is heavily armed. He also said that there was some speculation that he may have left the scene with other people, but Mike Bush says that's not the case. He was seen leaving alone. There is some concern for his partner and children. They are two children. They are yet to be found. Mike Bush says police are trying to locate them. But at the moment, Mike Bush is quite open about the fact that they haven't been able to find him, and it's a large operation to do so.
The suspect for this horrific event is still at large. We believe he is armed. We have deployed every specialist resource into this area to locate him. It is our priority. Our priority is to arrest him, to ensure that he's held to account for the actions, but also very much to bring safety and security to this community. We have hundreds of police resources assigned to this very important task.
And David, Victoria Police revealed anything else about this terrible shooting?
Look, not much, Sam. They are being careful with what they say at this point. But what we can say, though, is that the community in this area has been really shocked. Businesses and schools were notified and told to effectively go into shutdown, don't go outside. So there is still this sense of apprehension as this man, Desi Freeman, is still unfound by police.
David, thanks very much. David Sparks reporting for us there on those terrible events in the Victorian High Country today. Australia had a record number of drowning deaths in the year up to the end of June. The National Drowning Report from Royal Lifesaving Society Australia puts the toll at 357, up from 323 the previous year. And the lifesavers say a decline in swimming skills is largely to blame. Our reporter Julia Bergen spoke to visitors at the country's best known beach.
It's a sunny day at Sydney's iconic Bondi Beach. A nice change from the winter weather that's hit the city lately. But there are rips all along the shoreline, making the water dangerous for swimming.
The current was still pretty strong. And I was actually like pushed by a wave and I fell and I got a bit of water in my nose. So I was like, okay, I'm getting out now.
Hannah is visiting from Sweden. It's not her first time on an Australian beach, but she remains cautious entering the water. And she's obeying safety signs and instructions from lifeguards.
I think I would look at the beach and if there's not a lot of waves, I might go in. But then also if it does say don't swim, I don't know. If it looks safe, I might do, but then I don't know what safe is. I've been to other places in the world where you've heard about tourists like being dragged out because they're not aware of the dangers. It's just scary.
Oh, I'm very loud-mouthed. I always say to them, even though the conditions look great, just be careful. The Australian ocean is very different.
In the past year, Australia has recorded its highest ever number of drowning deaths. And once again, it's Australians, not tourists, who account for the majority of those deaths. Dr. Jaz Laws is the National Research Manager for Surf Lifesaving Australia.
About one in three drowning deaths are from people who are born overseas, and this is consistent with average, but the vast majority of people who drown are, you know, Australian residents and people born in Australia, and it's not the typical myths that people see. So what we're really asking everyone to do is make sure that they're brushing up on their lifesaving and water safety skills.
Dr. Laws co-wrote the annual National Drowning Report for Royal Lifesaving Australia and Surf Lifesaving Australia, which was released today. That report found that in the 12 months ending on June 30th, 357 people drowned in Australian waterways. Over 80% of them were men, 33% were over 65 years of age, and most drowning deaths occurred on the coast.
There's been a broad decline in swimming skills across the community, and also that coupled with more and more people travelling to remote and unfamiliar locations, which are away from life-saving and emergency services, really does put them at high risk. There are many hazards in those sort of natural environments, and it's true you cannot see the hazards underneath the water. Also, there are a lot of undercurrents that can take you by surprise.
There were 154 drowning deaths in coastal locations and 122 deaths in inland waterways. But Dr. Laws says that regardless of location, these tragic incidents are typically occurring in unpatrolled places a long way from emergency services. Back at Bondi Beach, German backpacker Jonathan sits on the hill nursing a foot injury. He sustained rock hopping at a waterfall in Queensland. He says it's a helpful reminder of the unexpected dangers that exist on Australia's waterways.
Always where we go, we are looking if we can swim here. Mostly not because of the water, but because of the animals. Like, are there stings or are there quokkas or are there sharks? So that's what we did. I think that's the first beach where you should be attentive because there are waves.
Jonathan says if he's to head into the water, he'll be hanging in the shallows.
Julia Bergen with that report. Thanks for joining me for PM. I'm Samantha Donovan. The podcast of the full program is available on the ABC Listen app. And we'll be back at the same time tomorrow. I hope you have a very good night.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley here, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. It's no secret that if it continues as it is, the National Disability Insurance Scheme will become financially unsustainable for the country. But is moving kids with autism off the scheme really a good idea? Today we talk to Jess, whose son has autism, and to the ABC's disability affairs reporter, Naz Campanella. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.